Okay, let's kick off again. And that was, I guess I was dreaming at saying 5 minutes. However, by the length of the queues, both in the bathrooms and for coffee, it was obvious we all did need that break. So I think it was probably worthwhile. And Michael will get more attention from us now, I think. So we will go on. I think the key for this session is probably the questions that Michael has for us, but Michael will give us an introduction, and obviously we've got the paper there. So I will now hand over to Michael.
Thank you very much, Joanna, and good morning, everybody. Yes, this session is looking at our post-implementation reviews. We completed our second one of these last year, and that was on business combinations. The one prior to that was on segment reporting. And we're due to start the next ones in the next few months. We wanted to take this opportunity, though, to reflect on the experience of those reviews, and in particular to consider the comments that have been received through both the trustees' review and also the agenda consultation with respect to post-implementation reviews. Now, one thing to perhaps just note is that the trustees have said that they do want to look at this area after the board has done a few more reviews, but nevertheless, as I say, wanted to take the opportunity to think about or reflect on the comments we've recently received. The questions on the back page of the paper cover five areas. First, looking at objectives and thinking about is it right to look at things like contentious issues? Is there an implicit focus within the reviews on perhaps the problems that there are, and should we be giving some consideration to what people are satisfied with the reviews? Touch on the review of older standards. A number of people commenting that they want to see us review the older IFRS standards. And also with regards to the timing of the reviews. So is 2 years of international implementation the right period of time in which to conduct these reviews? Should we be looking more at an event-driven review? So waiting until there are issues or significant issues about a standard before conducting a post-implementation review. Looking at the follow-up of the results and how those results feed into the board's research and standard-setting agendas, we received quite a number of comments relating to that, and you'll have seen in the paper some staff thoughts with regard to that, and the feeling that it's important for the board to use its judgment in reflecting on the nature of the comments that have been received through the post-implementation reviews. And then lastly, looking at interaction with US GAAP when we are looking at and reviewing standards that are converged with US GAAP, and how we should respond to the findings of the post-implementation review, and bearing in mind the comments that many people raised about the importance of maintaining convergence where we have convergence. I won't say anything more because I'd like to really spend the time listening to your comments and your thoughts on this. And I'm happy to hear your thoughts on all of the issues together rather than take them one at a time.
Okay, thank you, Michael, for that succinct summary, if you like, of what the thoughts are. And I think it really is quite an important topic. And for us, on the basis of our experience globally and, you know, are thinking about, you know, how this could affect the people that we work with or our geographies, and what is the best thing in terms of that post-implementation review, and the questions that Michael, and I'm sure if there are any other, if you like, pieces of advice generally around where should these be headed, that could be encompassed as well. So if we can keep it at a relatively, if you like, high strategic level in terms of those thoughts, do we have any comments or suggestions? And nobody, maybe I shouldn't have let you have that stop. Julie.
Thank you. Just to comment on the suggestion of taking a look at older standards, not to rule out looking at older standards, but it seems like that's a different idea than the post-implementation reviews right now, because the idea right now is to take those, you know, reasonably fresh decisions the board made, meaning 2 or 3 years ago, and just kind of see, you know, how they laid down. And where, needless to say, the board probably had to make trade-offs in some cases, you know, just kind of a look to see if those trade-offs seem like they're working out okay. Whereas, and, you know, any difficulties where you're trying to sort of take a new standard and apply it to old transactions, meaning, you know, account for existing transactions in a new way, where there's always some rubs there that would come out of it. But if you look at old standards, sort of neither of those things are going to bubble up. You're not, you know, you're not really taking a look at, you know, recent board thinking and was there any, and the judgments they made, and, you know, and how did that work out? Because obviously the thinking is 10, 20 years old. And then secondly, you're not really going to come across, you know, difficulties in practice, because by now practice has figured out how to take existing transactions and fit them into those standards. So there's not the types of difficulties that come up when you try to fit old transactions into new standards, and because practice is, you know, probably largely kind of settled. So that isn't to say that there isn't a worthwhile effort of looking at old standards, you know, kind of seeing with the same sort of philosophy of a post-implementation review, you know, is this still sort of doing what we want it to do? But it just strikes me as that may be literally more of a research-type function than a post-implementation reviews as we currently think about them. So I wouldn't rule out doing the line of thinking that people are talking about with old standards, but I think I wouldn't lump it together and say, oh, it's just another, you know, another item on the list for literally a post-implementation review, because it just seems like the objectives are different.
I guess, Juliet, actually, and you've some in that last sentence said depends what the objective is. You know, the objectives are different. You know, Michael's first question is what should the objectives be? And just being provocatively, if you like, different from what you've said, arguably, why are we doing separate post-implementation reviews as opposed to just generally reviewing standards for implementation issues? And is it actually just research? So, I mean, that's the, you know, so what is the objective? You know, and which comes first? And where should, as Yael said, the limited resources be focused, you know, in terms of looking at that? Having said that, I'm not supposed to be making all the comments here. I have quite strong views on this one, as you can see. Paul.
Thank you. Just a comment on the first one, and it's really in terms of the second part of the question that refers to should the PER automatically look at matters that had been contentious during the development. I would just stress, don't necessarily make that the primary focus, because quite often some of the contentious items that are, as the standard is being produced or prepared, tend to be non-issues once it's in practice. And once the standard's implemented, there's quite often things that weren't thought of from a practical point of view that come out. And I know you'd look at those. I suppose I'm just emphasising I wouldn't have that as the primary focus at the risk of not picking up those new things that that cause problems. And then the only other comment on looking at older standards, not necessarily older standards per se, but, and it's probably linked in with the disclosure initiative, but there might be a frequency of time, etc., when it's worthwhile standing back and looking at, not necessarily if the standard needs fixing, but are the disclosures still relative given changing economic times, business, etc.?
Jake.
Thank you. I guess to the question you asked about what is the primary purpose, do I think, of PIRs? In my view, when we set out to write a new standard, we're trying to provide users with information that they are going to use. So I think the primary purpose is to ask the question, actually, is the information that standard provided been used in the manner in which we intended or expected users to use it? And if not, why not? And that may involve opening contentious matters again. It may not. It really depends on what we set out to provide as information for those users. I would echo Paul's comment, though, as well, which is I think a secondary purpose of the post-implementation review would be to ask the question, are there things that this standard has caused to happen that we did not intend when we set out to write it? So there are there unintended consequences or practical implementation issues that we did not foresee when we wrote the standard?
Roger.
Well, just a couple of comments. Firstly, I agree with the previous comments that we shouldn't just be looking at contentious issues at the time of the development of the standard, because it could well be that since then new issues have arisen which are actually more fundamental. Secondly, I think it's not on the list, but I think also we should be thinking about, is there anything we can learn about the standard setting process which will help to develop better standards in the future? That's just part of a continuous improvement programme. And there is the parallel question as to who should these post-implementation reviews be for? Are they just for the board, or are they also for the trustees? And I think the US equivalent, the reporting is actually to the foundation and not to the board. So I think that's an issue to think about. Thirdly, the US gap, a convergence has been raised again. I think this is the third session at which that issue has been raised as to the importance of keeping converged standards converge going forward. But I think that subject, that's not at any cost. And I think a previous advisory council said that high quality standards come first. And clearly, staying converged is very important. And I wouldn't want the trustee strategy of staying converged to be a straitjacket which would prevent, if absolutely necessary, divergence to take place. And I think that would apply to the post-implementation reviews as well. And I think a parallel issue is I wouldn't want the rest of the world to feel excluded from commenting on areas which are converged and to feel that we're back in the 90s and that this is just an area which two boards are considering.
Thank you, Roger. I'm going to ask you, Michael, at the end to comment on, you know, or if there are any follow-up questions from you as a result of what people have said, because useful comments here. Gus.
I think on reflection on this, and I think it's already been alluded to in one or two other speakers, I think in looking at this, you've got to say, well, what are the criteria that is being looked at? You know, is it an area that people of the view that needs changing, or is it an area that people just don't like, but it still might be technically correct? So I think that's the one issue. And I think the other issue that doesn't seem to have been mentioned, which I think will also need to be considered, is that when the ISB's framework is completed, at that point, there probably also needs to be a consideration as to whether any of the standards should be revised as a result of whatever impacts that that framework might have, and where there might be inconsistencies between that and existing standards.
Thank you, Garth. Lotta?
Yes, on the issue of what the target of the PRIR should be and old versus recent standards. I mean, the key difference between old standards and recent standards is that new standards have not been put into practice. They're on a theoretical level. We don't know how they work. So once you actually implement them, there's a good reason, especially if they're contentious or complex, whatever, to check whether they actually work the way they're supposed to work. And that's, I think, important, and I don't know if that's really on the agenda enough. You have to be ready to actually make adjustments, make changes after implementation. Otherwise, the post-implementation review doesn't make sense, in my view. And we had that before. So that's the one thing, and that also, in my view, means that there's a distinct difference between these recent standards, where you have the PIR process, and old standards. I mean, given the resources of the ISB, I think it would be very difficult to have a regular review of every old standard after so many years and dig into that and see if there's anything wrong with it. I much prefer the research approach where you, you know, see if there's any problems anywhere and really focus on those things rather than have a regular time-consuming and resource-consuming review. That's my comment.
Thank you, Lothar. Pam.
Thank you. I wanted to just chime in that we do agree with those speakers who have stated that they would not favor an automatic review of with a PIR just because of a contentious issue during the development of a standard for the reasons that have been cited. On old standards, I think with being very mindful, as it's been pointed out several times today, of the resource constraints, I think that delving into that is probably not something that could be done right away, but perhaps a trigger such as a high volume of IFRIC consultations could be a trigger to look at an older standard. And in terms of other criteria, I think that trying to assess how pervasive the standard is, whether it applies to just a particular industry or is more pervasive, the complexity of the standard, the likely materiality of outcomes of applying the standard could be some criteria that are used to decide which standards would get a PIR. And I think, as others have said, the time frame of at least 2 years is an appropriate one. It could be a little longer.
Colin.
I'll be very brief because I'm conscious I'm between quite a lot of people and lunch. But you know, actually, Lothar has kind of really covered most of my point. It was about, I think, ensuring the emphasis where possible is on kind of front-loading this kind of outreach work to make sure that in the research phase and designing the standards, we do a really robust, a lot, I'd advocate doing more work there regarding how this will be applicable, operational, and does it have meet the requirements of users, and then obviously the post-implementations that kind of covers their back at the end of the process. But clearly it'd be more efficient if more work was targeted at the sort of design stage of the standard. I think that's the key point. And I would say on the resourcing piece, I think given the resource constraints of the ISB, I'd obviously, you know, continue to promote the use of national standard setters to help, you know, facilitate these reviews and leverage off of that wealth of experience that exists across the globe.
Shisong.
Thank you. Well, before issuing a particular standard, the board normally will make sure the benefit is greater than the cost. But in reality, this might not be the case. So I don't know if you look at the cost-benefit issues again in the PIR process. What I mean is that the cost of benefit should be reassessed in the PIR, and it should be become one of the objectives of the PIR. Thank you.
Ton. Sorry, I lie. Roxana.
I agree with those comments made in respect of the objective of the post-implementation review, in particular in relation to taking into account where there is evidence that there is diversity in practice. Then I was thinking of probably in terms of process, what is important is to think about the timing and not necessarily imposing the need of having an agenda consultation and having an approval of an item to be put on the agenda only after the agenda consultation, because sometimes the issue is like, if we remember what happened on IFRS 8, there was a post-implementation review in 2011, and then we had some exposure draft only 3 years later. So I think timing issue is also important.
Ton? Not. It's Mary, sorry. I couldn't see whose flag it was.
And I'll steal Andrew's mic. I'd like to go to a point that Roxana just made and that Lothar made before about timing and responsiveness to the PIR issues. Because for me as a board member trying to make agenda decisions, there's a real tension between when I look at this standard, here are the things that I see as an issue, and when I look across all reporting areas, the significance of the issues that I found when I looked at this standard versus the other issues that may be competing for space, remembering it's not just our time, but it's also stakeholders and their time to engage and relook at this. So I'd be interested in hearing comments, having heard, you know, Lothar, your encouragement to respond on a timely basis. And I think, Roxana, you were saying that. On the one hand, I want to agree and say, yes, we should respond directly. But the other part of me says, does that end up escalating things that just because they're discussed more recently may not be as high a priority? And is there anything you think we can do in the PIR process to get more sense of it, of the significance of the issues, not just in the context of the standard, but also in the context of our overall work program?
I might make a little comment about that in a minute, but Alan, first of all.
Thank you, Joanna. Just a couple of things, just relating to, I think Deloitte's view is that they've been working quite well so far. You've only had a couple of years anyway, and I think you need to give this a little bit of time to develop. To Roger's point, what I would, and it's in the due process handbook, which I happen to bring with me, is that it anticipated at the time that when you do a review, you want to learn from what you've done. So you go through this and you say, this is what we expected to happen. And one of the examples might be that we expected the transition to be relatively painless, and we discover in the review that it was not, and it was far more expensive. You actually can't go back and fix that because you've been through that transition. So I think you'll find over time that, particularly with the LISA standard, with the effects analysis you have, you've actually set out what you think the transition's going to be like, what the costs are likely to be. You can actually learn from that to try and feed back into the standard setting process itself. I don't think we've seen that in the initial reviews, but I'm not convinced you've actually had the tools to be able to do that. And I think that's something you should think about in future reviews. The other thing where I think it's in point four in the questions where the most benefit would be drawn from this is some clarification about, well, I've learnt that it didn't quite do as I anticipated, and something like, for example, in Goodwill, the question about amortisation versus whether the impairment model's working, what do I do? And I think there's a bit of tension and certainly not consensus around whether or not you need to wait for an agenda consultation, whether it's a post-implementation review and so on. In Deloitte's letter on the agenda consultation, we didn't think that it was a gateway. We thought that was about strategic balance of that. But in the paper in paragraph 13, it talks about waiting for the three-year review before you actually do anything. And we think it'd be very helpful if you got some clarification about what sort of level activity might come out of a post-implementation review.
Thanks, Alan. Any other? Yep, go for it.
Thanks, Joanna. Just, I was going to comment pretty much the same as what Alan and Mary just said, particularly on question four, the question about the intersection between what we learn in a post-implementation review and then the board standard setting project. I think that's, Mary raised to me the most difficult question of this whole analysis, and that is, you know, trying to figure out what we learn and then what we're going to do with it. I do agree with Alan and what was commented on in paragraph 13 that if we find something with a standard, you shouldn't necessarily wait for a post-implementation review to fix it if it's going to be a quick fix. But then I think the question becomes, and the paper did a good job, I think it was paragraph 32, in articulating the tension between looking at what might be a quick fix and just doing it, or something that needs to go into the research agenda to have more thoughtful consideration then around what the next steps might be. And that's probably the place, getting back to Mary's comment, when you really start to have the significant resource allocation discussion. But even before, we all know that things that we think are going to be quick fixes aren't always quick fixes. So I think it's a real dilemma, and I'm not sure I've got the answer to it, but that's to me where the staff and the board need to spend a lot of time thinking about this, and we could talk about it some more as well.
Just some comments from me, and this is me as an individual rather than me as the chairman, and the particularly around, you know, Mary's comments really made me think, and I guess it's also from the comments I made initially in terms of, you know, reviewing the older standards. And I actually think that And Donita, you've said, you know, when you get the PIR making that assessment as to whether you're going to do something or you're sitting around the board, I wonder whether, in fact, it's before that, before you even do the PIR, it's your cost-benefit of actually saying, where should we put our resources? We've assumed, and it's partly of what, that we're going to do PIRs, but actually that too is consuming both resources of the ISB and resources of the stakeholders. And if we've got a gut feel that there isn't, why are we going to use those resources? And that they may be better used in looking at an older standard and doing a research project, for instance. So to me, I certainly don't have the answer as to how you do that cost benefit, but maybe actually thinking at the earlier stage even, you know, where should the resources be allocated and doing a cost benefit across right at the high level rather than before you even do say, well, we're doing a PR, now we're saying, how do we affect the standard?
I'm just thinking about that, reflecting on that, obviously needing to have some basis on which to make that sort of judgment it would then be my next sort of question on that. Now, the process that we have, and as set out in the due process handbook, it does envisage, and we follow a two-stage approach, in that the first stage is doing a very much a limited look at and some targeted look at what the experience has been, things like looking at what the Interpretations Committee experience has been with a particular standard. What we've done with the ones so far is maybe talk to the large accounting firms about their experience, given their sort of global perspective, talking to IOSCO. So targeting certain key groups, but before we go into a general public consultation that is going to occupy a lot of time and effort from both stakeholders and from the ISB, and making the assessment at that stage, and then perhaps bringing that, the results of that sort of limited look to the board for it to then make that judgment about is there a need to go that second step that would require greater resources if based on that initial assessment there either isn't very much that's troubling people, or that the things that are troubling people perhaps are just in one or two areas. Should we be better focused on just those areas rather than a broader look at the standard as we've done with the standard so far?
I think, obviously, I mean, there's been a number of comments there. I think all of them probably useful for you. And thinking at that higher level as to where you do head. As a result of those, Michael, and you've responded, if you like, to my comment, which is very naughty, and of me. And are there others that, from what people have said, that prompt you to do a follow-up question, and certainly, obviously, individual conversations with you that people have got you may find useful? Is there anything you want to follow up on at this stage in the plenary session rather than perhaps with individual people?
I suppose it is along those lines of for the new standards, and it's in respect of the new standards that we have this obligation on us at the moment to at least do the initial assessment. There are some mixed views, I think, that we've heard in terms of whether we need to be doing these post-implementation reviews automatically for each one. And I suppose my sense, and certainly the way that I would respond to what we've heard so far, is to say, no, I don't think we need to do it automatically, at least not if we've done some sort of high-level look at it that doesn't require a lot of resources. And so I would be interested to see whether there is general support or actually contra views to that reaction.
A lot of people obviously want to respond to that. Now, David did want to say a few words, so I might actually get David to speak first.
Thank you. I just wanted to pick up on Roger's point about reporting to the board or reporting to the trustees. In fact, it's both. Because the trustees in particular through the Due Process Oversight Committee are kept up to date with the conduct and progress of each PIR, And in fact, when the draft report comes to them, the DPOC has to sign off that it's satisfied before it finally comes out. They say, we've completed our review, everything looks fine, and it can go. We actually take a different approach that was taken by the Financial Accounting Foundation in the States, where it was foundation staff who did the review. And at the time we brought PIRs in, we looked at that model, thought, do we implement the same, or do we have the board looking at it itself? And we took the view that it would be better to have the board do it in a very transparent way, mindful of the fact that it might be the board marking its own homework, but with the backstop that the DPOC would play a very active role through. And I think that's worked quite well so far. But as Michael said in the introduction, at some stage the trustees will want to review the whole PIR process when we've got more experience.
If I can make one additional comment, in the United States, the PIRs were originally done by the foundation of the FESB, and they have decided to adopt our model, to have the board itself do it, since all the technical knowledge is there.
Anne Johnson.
Just a very short comment. We would support event-driven post-implementation reviews. And also with this period of 2 years, it's sometimes rather difficult. You said you looked at comments submitted to the to IFRIC and so. What also could be an interesting part of information is early application of standards. Sometimes you have quite a long early application period for a standard. If you see that a lot of companies do early application, it might give you an idea as to the number of problems they see or don't see.
Anne Molyneux?
Yes, just a comment. I go to the OECD on their corporate governance development of their principles. Now, they're not standards like accounting standards. However, they have a more tiered approach to the kind of review. In other words, if they're getting feedback that something isn't quite working or there's some problems here, they might investigate a little just to see if there are more widespread than one or two countries that might feedback, but then they might do a peer review of selected, say, five or six countries that might give you a bit of a bead. So perhaps just look at a few companies or a few countries and the way it's implemented and the issues, rather than a very wide kind of review.
Colin?
Yeah, Michael, apologies if I missed it, but I think you kind of explained that a lot of the initial post-implementation reviews, at least the scoping, might be undertaken with the assistance of the large accounting firms, including a lot of merit, and that makes a lot of sense from a preparer perspective. But I just wonder if, I'm representing the investor angle, I think that's also quite important in that process, because obviously a couple of different lenses with quite different perspectives can probably give you a more rounded picture as regards, you know, if there is any deficiencies or any big problems inherent in the standards. So I'd encourage you to look to maybe utilise the Investors in Financial Reporting Initiative and other sort of mechanisms to try and bring that into the process.
Okay, Michael, unless you've got any final comments, I'm going to propose that we wrap that up at that point. I think and hope that you've got some useful advice from the Council, and certainly if individuals have got some specific comments, you know, to have a conversation with Michael, I think would be useful, or even to drop an email at some point if you come up with something I'm sure you would find useful.